This episode is presented by Tri-State Cadillac Dealers. Hi, I'm Jalen Rose, and welcome to the Renaissance Man Podcast, proudly presented by the New York Post. Next up, we have stand-up comedian great and star of the new film out right now called Easter Sunday, Joe Coy. Coming up, I talked to Joe about overcoming racial prejudice while growing up, the moment he decided to use comedy as a form of expression, and how fatherhood changed his approach to his craft. Up next, Joe Coy. Let's go. Hi, I'm Jalen Rose, and welcome to the Renaissance Man Podcast, proudly presented by the New York Post, a show where we cover trends in fashion, entertainment, current events, and everything in between. Download the podcast right now. Leave a 5-star rating. As a matter of fact, I got great news. The Renaissance Man is officially up for consideration for People's Choice Podcast Awards in two separate categories. First and foremost, entertainment. There's nobody more entertaining than me. And by the way, I heard a theme that if you don't toot your own horn, sometimes the music don't get played. So you got to vote for me right now in entertainment. And also, best Black hosted. I am Black. I am a host. I am the best. This show is awesome. Look at the people we've interviewed on this program. September 8th will be the 100th episode. We've written a column about every person that's also been on this show. I'm extremely grateful to all of the supporters, all of the listeners. Shout to the New York Post. Shout to my producers. Everybody killing the game. But now let's win these awards. And the winners will be announced September 30th. So listen up. If you happen to be a judge, I appreciate your consideration. And everybody else, we truly appreciate your support. This week's theme is remember your roots. There's a way to keep moving forward in your life while honoring the people, places, and experiences of your past. Your roots are the foundation of who you are. But it's easy sometimes to forget that. I know firsthand life is busy. And when we're finding success and working hard and doing our thing, you know what happens? You can lose connection from where you're from. Listen, I love being from Detroit. I boss up every time people see me. I say, what up, though, every time you hear me. Anybody who listens to this podcast, it's called The Renaissance Man. That's the monument in Detroit that would be our postcard if you were vacationing there. So everybody that's followed my career knows this. And no matter how far I go in life, my city will always be a part of my personality, my culture, and who I am. Find ways to honor your block, your hometown, and family while you're on your personal journey to success. Listen to the stories of the OGs, older family members back home. Look for ways to have family reunions. Keep traditions alive. Support causes in the community that you grew up in. Give back, because by remembering your roots, you learn to trust your wings. My next guest knows all about that. Joe Coy is a talented comic who is one of the most successful stand-up comedians in the country and has multiple Netflix specials in his name. Coming up, I talked to Joy about his relationship with his Filipino mom, the love he has for the legendary Whoopi Goldberg, and the lessons he learned from his biggest comedic failures. Up next, Joe Coy. Hi, I'm Jalen Rose. And welcome to the Renaissance Man Podcast, proudly presented by the New York Post, a show where we cover trends in fashion, entertainment, current events, and everything in between. My next guest is one of today's premier stand-up comics, who has had four highly rated and successful comedy specials on Comedy Central and Netflix. His new movie, Easter Sunday, is out right now, and it tells the story of a family gathering for Easter, and it's based on his life. And it's been described as a love letter and celebration of the Filipino-American culture. It is my honor to welcome the multi-talented Joe Coy to the Renaissance Man podcast.
Let's go, man. What's up, legend?
What's up, my brother? I appreciate you taking the time.
I'm so happy right now. This is big right here for me.
That's mutual. So for those who haven't seen your comedy specials, what was it like growing up in several different cities in a military family with a white dad and Filipino mom?
I always say this. It was the times, you know. It was that's the generation that I come from, and it's hard to explain that, how hard it was to have a mom, an immigrant mom, going to different environments where socially she's not accepted. You know what I mean? Her identity is invisible. Her voice is unheard. You know, it's like, wow. Now I can say that. Now I can say it and understand as an adult, and also with the times that we live in where it's not acceptable anymore. Whereas we lived in a time where it was normalized, where it's okay for you all to, how do I say it? Represent my mom on the screen, you know, or treat my mom the way you think is okay with you. And she's not allowed to express herself. That was weird. It was a weird time, and I'm glad I got to go through that time, because it shows where we need to go from here. And you know, we're in 2022 now, and this is the first film ever by a major studio, Universal, DreamWorks, and Amblin, that's putting an all-Asian cast on the big screen. It's mind-blowing that my mom has lived in this country for 51 years, and this is her first time actually seeing her culture being represented on the big screen.
That is incredible. And, you know, overcoming those challenges is incredible by you and your family. And usually when I hear comedians speak, a lot of times they talk about the comedy that they use is clearly a reflection of the things that they've been exposed to. Yeah. So growing up in Tacoma, Washington, like, what was your childhood like under that dynamic?
It was weird, you know, and I hate always starting my sentences off by saying it's hard to explain to this culture, this generation now, but it really was. Mm-hmm. Things were normalized back then. You know, you watch TV and you're seeing a portrayal of you, and it's misinformed. It's oppressive. It's embarrassing, but you have to accept it because that's the norm. And you almost feel like a visitor to this country instead of being a citizen. You know, my mom is, even though she's an American, she feels like, okay, I'm just visiting, so I better not speak up and tell people that this is offensive. Sorry. Right. And that's wrong. It sucked. You know, I always tell people like, you know, in the 70s and 80s, you know, especially in the early 80s, you know, I saw my mom just kind of suck it up when something happened. And I tell this story in my book, but it's like we won this TV and we went upstairs to go collect the prize, right? It was this raffle that we won, and it was a TV. It was like 1983. Mm-hmm. And as we're going up the escalator, my mom sees this little white kid, I hate to say that. And she's like, you know, my mom loves kids. She's like, oh my God, you're so cute. What's your name? And the kid turns around and just pulls his eyes back.
Oh.
Far back as he can. And he bucks his teeth. Oh. And he's like, oh, like that. Oh. And I'm like 10. And I just remember, it burns in my soul. Like, to this day, I still see it vividly. And I just remember, like, yo, what? Like, what the f was that? Like, I didn't even know how to react, because I'm seeing someone doing something very hurtful to my mom. And then my mom reacting Like, it's okay because it's a kid and it's just a joke, Joseph. Mm-hmm. He's a kid. And it's like, no. Right. Like, that shit don't fly anymore, Jalen. Right. It's absolutely. Like, we're not going to use that lazy excuse anymore. And it's back then it was normalized because, you know, this kid was watching cartoons where the Asians were going, oh, 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 oh.
Yes.
And everyone in the house is laughing. And then dad's even saying, yeah, that's hilarious. Right. You know, the parents are responsible for that kid's actions. And you know what I mean? Like, the kid knew it was wrong.
Correct.
But also the parents were really wrong. And like that's not going to fly anymore. You know, we're not gonna take that anymore. And I don't want my mom to feel like she can't say anything. I want my mom. Well, here's the thing: my mom has always been boisterous, but in that situation, it was just like it was sad to see my mom go through that. So I don't want to ever see that to happen now.
Absolutely. When did you realize that you wanted to use comedy as not only a form of entertainment, but also a form of expression?
Yeah. I learned that from, you know, Eddie Murphy's Delirious changed my life. You know what I mean? Like, classic. You know, when you're a kid, Richard Pryor told me to be a comic. You know what I mean? When I listened to Richard Pryor tapes, I'm like, I got to be this when I grow up. Eddie Murphy was like, he's speaking to my soul right now. Like, I don't know what it was. Now I understand. I understand why I was relating to him so much because there was no representation for Asians on TV. And for some reason, I'm identifying with this guy's family right now. It's like, I have an Aunt Bunny.
Yeah.
I have an Uncle Gus that starts a broke-ass fire with gasoline. My uncle does the same shit. We're broke. My mom's got bionic ears. My mom hits me with a fucking slipper. I know this dude. I know that mom. That mom is my mom.
Yes.
I guess I'm black.
Right. So,
and by the way, that's another thing. Filipinos and black people just go hand in glove. I don't know what that is, but we just do.
Absolutely.
Without any explanation, Jalen, you take a black person and put it with any other ethnicity and they got to explain to each other what it is. But for some reason, Filipinos and black people just be like, you get it, huh? I get it.
No question. Manny Pacquiao, that's my guy. I've been to the gym with him. And every time an NBA team gets swept out of the playoffs, I say, Wallies.
Yeah.
Wallies as a representation. Absolutely.
I love it. I love you. See, this is why I love you, Jalen. This is why I always connected with the Fab Five. I love you. But yeah, it was delirious. That just changed my life. Like he was speaking to me. Like at that moment, I was like, I need a red leather outfit, and I'm gonna be a comedian. Right when I graduate, I'm gonna be Eddie Murphy. And then I started learning about Eddie when I knew that he was like 18 when he got on Saturday Night Live. I think he was 21 when he shot Delirious, bro.
Crazy.
21.
Crazy.
You know, and it's just like, imagine 21.
21.
Like, and talking about what he did, it's like some of the stuff, you know, this today you'd be like, no, you can't say that, but you're like, yeah, but he was 21,
right?
He was a kid. He was a little kid.
Yes,
that was controlling that stage like a man. Like, just yo, I loved everything about that guy, man. And made you feel confident, and I was like, I'm gonna be him. And so yeah, I fell in love with the artist storytelling then, like the way he described his family. And I was like, yeah, I'm going to describe my family, and I'm going to tell my stories, and I'm going to do it in a way where it's not a comparison. You know, I don't want to go up there and go, Filipinos do this and white people do that. I didn't want to do that. I wanted to tell you my story, a real story, and have you relate to it.
Right. But the one thing about athletics, entertainment, comedy, that's your goal. That's your dream.
Yeah.
But everybody else don't see it coming.
Nope.
So what was it like for you when you started to tell your family, your friends, this is what I want to do for a living?
Yeah, all of them. Not all of them. My siblings were like, yes. But the generation, you know, the parents, the aunts and all of them, that's, you're crazy. Mm-hmm. We didn't come to this country so you can be a clown, okay?
Right.
We didn't leave our family so you can be in a circus.
Right.
You know, you're supposed to take care of us now. You go to college, get money, and help the family. Like,
Right.
So being chasing a dream, she's like, you better wake up from this dream. Reality is a nurse.
Right.
So be a nurse. But it was hard for me to explain to my mom what comedy was. And it just, no matter how many times I showed her Eddie Murphy or Richard or, you know, everyone, she just didn't get it. She just didn't understand it. That's like, they're different, Joseph, that you're not them. And it's like, I had to prove to her, like, no, you're wrong, Mom. This is it. And I'm talking, man, you don't understand. 15 years in, I think I was like 33. And I just had my son. And my mom would just look at me. I swear, this is a true story, Jalen. It was after, we were at a restaurant. And when we left the restaurant, my son's like one. And my mom literally was just like sighing, like, please, Joseph, stop. Like, she thought I was like, this is just like I'm having fun.
Right.
She didn't understand what chasing a dream, like, Joseph, right. Stop. Like, enough with the stand up. Like, get a job. You have a son now. You need insurance. Like, you, how are you going? If he gets sick, Joseph, what are you going to do, Joseph? Mm-hmm. Like, and that, that hurt. It hurt me because she just didn't understand what this meant to me. So, I guess it fueled the fire even more. It burnt inside.
When did you know, what performance did you know I got what it takes?
Ooh, that's a good one. There was twice it happened. There was a coffee house moment. It was called Buzzy's Cafe, and there was maybe six people in there. And I heard my first, like, applause. I got six people at a coffee house to, like...
Right.
And I'm like, ooh, okay, I got it. And then I think my next moment, man, there's some good ones, Jalen. We could talk all day, man. How I got BET's Comic View. You know, I went to the door. It was BET's live, right? They did it live, and it was a concert. And I went up to the front door and went to a security guard with a fake headshot and a resume. It was all fake. Like, I didn't open for anybody on that resume. It was all full of shit. And I handed it to the security guard, and I was like, hey, man, I'm a local comic. A lot of people like me. And if you don't mind, I'd like to open up if you could just talk to the promoter. And he went and got the promoter. Like, when have you ever seen a security guard shit like that?
Right.
Right? Security is like, hey, man, buy a ticket, motherfucker. Like, right. No, he went. He was like, I'll be right back. I was like, oh, shit. And he went and got the promoter. I still know her to this day, man. That shit was 26 years ago, 26, 27 years ago. And her name's Yvette Anderson. I'm giving a big shout out.
To
she changed my life. Yvette Anderson, black woman. She was promoting all these BET shows. And she came up to the front door, and I handed her my resume. And I said, I'm a local comic. Can I just do like 5 minutes of warm up? I love BET's Comic View. It would mean the world to me. And she was like, the show's already booked. Everyone's already in their seats, but you want to come to the show? And maybe next time, let me look at this resume, maybe next time. And I was like, yes, let me come in. She sat me down, sat me right next to the stage. Jalen,
wow.
I'm not doing a stereotype, okay? Wow. Don't get mad when I do this.
Right, for sure.
But every comic was late.
Of course, of course.
For the black show.
It's called CP time.
This is also Filipino time. Filipinos are always late for shit. So every comic, even the host, like, how are you the host late
the
for
DJ,
this?
Everybody, the waiters, DJ the waitresses, everybody.
No, the mixer wasn't even there in the two turntables. He was like still picking it up. And I'm, yo, the show started at 7:30. I'm talking like it was like 8:30. Like 8:30, and people are going, they're getting mad. You can hear them yelling. And Yvette walks up to me. She's like, do you mind going up until they get here? They're about 10 minutes out. I'm like, please. I go, can you please record it? She had a camera. I go, can you just press record? I need this tape. And she goes, I'll record it. Brought me up, Jalen. I get a standing O. I got it on tape. I got the whole thing on tape.
That's dope.
I get a standing O. I'm walking off stage. And Bo P, big shout out to Bo P. He was hosting that day. And he goes, who the fuck is this guy? And he's like some local kid. He's like, motherfucker, you funny. By the way, I'm not doing a horrible impersonation of Bo P. Look him up. He goes, you want to be on Comic View? I go, yes. He goes, you want? And flew me out the next week, bro.
Flew me out the next week.
And that's how I got BET's Comic View. And that was that moment where I was like, I'm in. like I'm in right now. So that changed my life right there.
Well, speaking of
just keep going on. I got so many stories, Jalen.
That is crazy. How about this? So I was still playing in the league. I'd done the basement on BET. I've done 106 in Park. Ooh. And I got traded to the Bulls, and I knew we weren't going to go to the playoffs. I reached out to somebody at BET, and BET Mad Sports, it was Lakers versus New Jersey Nets. That's the first NBA Finals I covered for TV.
Oh, are you serious?
And this is my 20th year.
What?
Yes, BET Mad Sports was the first one I used to cover the NBA Finals. True
That's
story.
Crazy, Jalen.
So we definitely gonna big up BET. And I have to ask big you fun. This: being
Changed
an athlete,
life,
no doubt, mine too. And being an athlete and being a comic, I've talked to so many of my friends that have been on this show that I've gone to shows. The adversity of bombing, because it's going to happen. So talk about a time when you bombed and how it relates to real life for those that don't know and how you overcame it.
Now, I'm going to talk about something else because people don't understand what, okay, there's bombing and then there's bombing in front of Black people.
Mm-hmm.
And that's another element because they let you know loudly. You know what I mean? It there's not silence. It's like, hey man, get the fuck off the stage.
Right.
Like, who is this? Yeah, you know how many times I've seen this? What the yo, hey, wrap it up, motherfucker. several times. And you get a bro. Fat Tuesdays. Let me just tell you, Fat
Been
Tuesdays.
There.
Right?
Been
I'm a,
there.
I'm a veteran of Fat Tuesdays, man. Big shout out to Guy Tori.
No doubt. Guy T.
Yeah. Guy T put me on the map, man. And this is a perfect example. This is why I have beef with Gary Owen to this day. Me and Gary love each other. Don't get me wrong. He's my boy. But Gary was hosting Fat Tuesdays, right? I drove from Vegas all the way to do a 5 to 10 minute set on Fat Tuesdays. Now, this is everything. If anyone knows what Fat Tuesdays is, this is everything.
It's that
especially
deal.
If you're a comic.
Yes.
You know, you never know who's in there, man. It could be Quentin Tarantino to Dr. Dre. It's like the spectrum was wide. So you wanted to be in this room, and no one made more stars than Fat Tuesday.
Agreed.
So for real, man, for real. And so I go, I'm so pissed, man. I had these people come to write an article about me, it was an Asian magazine that was going to come do an article. Oh, fuck. Jalen, you're going to love this one, man. You're going to love this one. All right. So it's an Asian magazine. I need this. They're giving me the cover of this magazine.
No doubt.
Jalen, the cover. I need this. I'm working at a dolphin habitat as a tour guide. I need this interview. They brought a photographer. They brought the writer and they brought the editor and the owner of this magazine.
Wow.
And they're sitting there. And so I walk up. Gary walks up to me. I, by the way, Gary was the host of BET's Comic View when I got on Comic View. That's the year Sed left and Gary was the new host.
Yep.
So, wow, this is crazy how everything is coming full circle. And I'm sorry I'm talking too much. But,
I love it.
Yeah, I've been wanting to talk to you for my whole life. So sit there and just talk and listen.
Gotcha. My pleasure.
My whole life, bro. You don't understand. So Gary walks up, he shakes my hand, and he's like, all right, man, if you don't mind, George Wilburn. Now, if you don't know comedy, George Wilburn is a very specific Black comic, and he's very well known in the Black comedy business.
Uh-huh.
Okay, stand up, Black comedy rooms. George Wilburn, Steve Harvey suits. You know what I mean? The big light blue, the purple crush.
Mm-hmm.
So here's George Wilburn, and he's like, "Hey, George is going to go up in front of me." And I look at Gary with the most. You can see me crying in my eyes, like Gary. Like, there's people here to see me, man. Like, you can't put George in front of me.
Right.
I know
Let
it's
me go
about
first.
To happen.
Right.
I know it's about to happen. I'm like, please, Gary, I'm just going to do like 8 minutes. I'll even cut my time like eight, five. I'll do five. Like, they're here to write about me. Please. He's like, and then George walks up. He's like, I'm about to do like 10 minutes, man. It's just, I got to do another room. I got to go to Mixed Nuts and I got another spot. I'm like, I go, okay, George. All right, go up. Jalen, George goes out and f-ing destroys. Ooh. Like, not only destroys, but then there's a heckler, right? There's this girl, him and this girl go at it for about 7 minutes. They're going at it. And of course, George just knocks it. I can't even remember the joke, but it was so big. People were standing when he said it. And then he got off stage. They're going crazy. Gary and him start hugging and just laughing. And you can literally just see me just crying. Like, what the fuck, man? And of course, Gary, by the way, I've told this whole story to Gary already, man. We've gone at it back and forth. So Gary goes up and doesn't even try to calm the room down.
Like, didn't help you out at all.
He doesn't even bite the bullet. He doesn't do anything. It's just, ladies and gentlemen, Joe Coy. I'm like, this motherfucker, man.
Oh, by the way, ladies and gentlemen, Joe Coy.
Oh, did you like George Wilford? Yeah. All right. This dude doesn't even say my name. I go up and it bombed for the minute I walked out. It was the worst bomb I ever had. I get off stage. Gary's like, hey, you know, we'll get you back on, man, blah, blah, blah. He's acting like nothing happened. And then I go up to the writer, and I swear to God, Jalen, this is what they say to me. They're like, we'll come back next time.
Oh, no. We'll reschedule it.
Yeah, you just had an off night. We'll come back. I'm like, fuck. 6 months later, well, I finally get that magazine, but it was 6 months later, man. I mean, that it was the worst bomb of my life, like hands down. But it makes you tough, you know, right. and you need the bomb. It yes. humbles you. It prepared me to like not just count on my set. Mm-hmm. I needed to learn how to adjust. I needed to learn how to like step up and be able to follow that, tag it. Mm-hmm. And that's what I love about Black Rooms. It's the honesty, you know. It taught me how to be real and honest and go up there, and that's why. Like, I always have stories about Joe Torre. You know, Joe Torre always said, "Don't be afraid of silence." And you know, like when you have a room quiet, that's when they're listening. I've carried that throughout my life. I tell every comic that opens for me, don't be afraid of silence, because when you're silent, that's when they're listening. Mm-hmm. That's when you're saying something. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, Cedric the Entertainer. I tell these two stories all the time. I'm not just doing it because I'm on your show. Cedric the Entertainer, I opened for him at the Morongo, and I was trying to treat him as if I was George Wilbur.
Oh,
I was going to go up there. I wanted to go up, and there was 3,000 people in the room, and I wanted to have my George Wilbur moment.
Oh,
I wanted to, like, kill it so hard that Cedric couldn't follow me, and I wanted that to be my story.
Okay,
I wanted to be able to tell everyone, yeah, Cedric, yeah, that
he entertained. Follow
me, man. he should just do movies, man, because he ain't ready for this shit. Bro, Jalen, I went up at the Morongo Casino, over 3,000 people. I'm telling you, Jalen, when I gave you my best set. I'm talking, I cut all the fat out and just went set up, punch, set up, punch, set up, punch. Ladies and gentlemen, my name's Joe Coy. Good night. I had them standing, Jalen. In my head, I'm saying to myself, there's no fucking way Sed is following this. There's no fucking way. He might as well just not come out. It's done. And I turn to my left, Jalen, and there's Cedric, right? He's got his, you know how Sed dresses. He's got his big fedora on. He's
no
got
doubt.
The self-dressed suit, the matching fucking
cleaner shirt. Than a board of health.
And he's holding a drink, and he's looking at me, and he's bouncing like this. He's bouncing like a heavyweight fighter in the corner. And he goes, "That's what I'm talking about, Joe Coy. Make me work for this motherfucking check. Let's go, Joe Coy." And he hugs me. Jalen, I've never seen anything like that. I've never seen confidence like that.
Legend.
And literally, I'm like, what the fuck just happened? Like, as he walked on stage, I'm saying, like, you can hear them go, ladies and gentlemen. You know, he's got this big intro. Give it up for Cedric Anderson. The explosion. I'm talking about maybe 40 seconds into his act. I don't think anyone remembered who the fuck opened for Cedric. Like, literally. And my son was backstage. His mommy was backstage at the time. And I literally was like, let's get in the car. Like,
time to go.
I gotta sell shoes at 10 tomorrow. So.
But how about your come up, though? In 2017, yeah. You broke a record in Honolulu. Yeah,
that was the
consecutive sellouts. What was it like for you to amass that type of audience and really achieve that milestone?
It was that moment where there was a shift, like a dramatic shift, right? Because that was like, I think I was like 20, I'd have to say 27 years in the game at that point, to the point where I'm like, I want to quit. Mm. Like Netflix was like doing original stand-up specials in 2017. Mm. And for some reason, they didn't offer me one. And I didn't understand because I was crushing everywhere. And I'm like, to the point where I kept calling them and they were like not showing up. And then finally they just said, we don't want it. We're going to pass. I'm like, pass? You don't, what the fuck? You didn't even see it. Like, come see right. it. Right. So Jan, we shot it ourselves, even though they said no. I paid for the whole thing. We paid for it. We shot it. We rented out the theater. We sold the tickets for it, and we cut it up. And by the way, I just want you to know, Jalen. 2 days before we shot that special, they called my manager and they said, "Hey, we heard Joe Coy shooting a special. We just want you to know, we really don't want it."
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
They legit called and said,
don't think you're doing that for us because you're not doing that for us.
Exactly, Jalen. They were like, hey, don't get too confident. We really don't want it. I'm like, what the fuck?
Wow.
Shot it anyway. That's why I said I felt like I wanted to retire and just quit. And we sent it to him after we cut it up anyway. We were like, hey, look, we know you said no, but look at it. And literally, we got a phone call in like 30 minutes. Like, don't shop it anywhere. We want it. I'm like, motherfucker, we could have done this a long time ago. And then they aired that special, and it changed our life. And Hawaii was the one that showed us how much it changed our lives. And we sold 12 consecutive shows out at the Blaisdell Theater, and we broke Mariah Carey's record. I think I beat her by 1,000 tickets. Like, I think I sold 23,000 tickets. We beat her like by 1,000 tickets.
That is crazy. And you mentioned your son. What part of fatherhood has changed you as an artist and just as a man?
He's the reason why I couldn't quit, you know? Mm-hmm. So he's the reason why I shot that special. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I was like, if I quit, he's going to see a quitter. Word. He's going to see a guy that chased his dream and gave up on it. Mm. And he's a guy that took no for an answer instead of showing them why they should have said yes. I didn't want to show him that, the lack of confidence. I didn't want to show him the not winning. I want to win in front of him. Mm-hmm. And this is how I'm going to win. And he got to witness all of it. Mm-hmm. He saw all that go down. So yeah. And thank God he did. And you know, if I didn't shoot that special on for Netflix myself, I would have never made Coming in Hot, which was the second special on Netflix. Mm-hmm. And that's the one Steven Spielberg watched. Mm-hmm. And that's how I got this movie, is from that special.
And that's what I wanted to ask you about. And again, congratulations. New movie, Easter Sunday. Make sure you guys check that out. But you've been blowing up now. I saw you on The View. I saw you arranging chairs, getting a chance to sit next to Whoopi Goldberg. Getting a chance to let her know how much you appreciate her.
I had to.
What was that moment like for you?
That was that. I didn't know how emotionally attached I was to her, but you know, it was just like when I wrote my book and I had to do the audio version of it. Like, you can write the book, that's easy. But when you read it out loud and hear it, you get emotional. Correct. And you're like, oh, fuck, yeah, that that was my life. You know what I mean? Oh, I totally forgot, but now I remember. It was triggering. And like, you know, her one man show changed my life. You know, it was like, I couldn't stop watching it, how she went in and out of characters. And it was just her on this stage and being heard, you know what I mean? And coming up with these characters and just captivating these, you know, this audience and owning HBO. Like, she owned it. Like, they played her nonstop. Mm-hmm. That special kept going. And I totally forgot how much I loved her and how much she meant to me and why I'm here today. It's because of her. That little kid that dreamed to be a comic was inspired by Eddie Murphy, Whoopi, Richard. You know what I mean? Like, they inspired me. So, and I've said this before I even met her, there was interviews where like, who's your inspiration? I've always said, Whoopi Goldberg, her one-man show changed my life. You know, Delirious, Whoopi. I've always said Whoopi. And so when I turned and looked for the first time, and there she was in front of me, they came out. It was just like the emotions just came out, man. Like, I'm getting choked up right now saying it. So, you know, I met my hero today, and that was amazing. I met two heroes today. I got to meet you, man. So,
thank you, family.
Yeah, well, man.
I appreciate that. And you mentioned a couple, so I have to ask. I've heard you mention Eddie and Richard and Whoopi. So I must ask you, who and what are your top five stand-up specials?
Oh, that's easy, man. I can go all day on this one. Richard Live on Sunset Strip. Eddie Murphy, Delirious, and Rob, we'll put him in the same category. Mm-hmm. Bring the Pain changed my life, and it also changed comedy, and it also changed socially, like the way people acted and the way people looked at each other because of that special. Mm-hmm. Like, he made a lot of people like look at themselves on that special. And you know what I'm talking about.
I do.
So Bring the Pain and Bigger and Blacker can go in the same category as well.
No doubt. Dave Chappelle.
Killing Me Softly, Dave Chappelle. Oh my God. Platypus Man, Richard Jenny. Brian Regan, a pair of jokers with his brother. I can go on for days. Whoopi Goldberg, Around the World. Robin Williams, Live at the Met. God, man, Bernie Mac and Steve Harvey, Kings of Comedy. Epic. It made everyone know that you could sell arenas out, even though Eddie and all them did it before him. But something about that show was a movement.
No question.
It showed Hollywood. Stop fucking saying we're too specific and we don't have a voice. Yes. We sell out arenas.
Yes.
So that was pivotal. So D.L. Hughley and the list goes on, man. I can go on for days.
I saw multiple shows that they did, and I can't wait to come support you. Can't wait to support Easter Sunday, everything you have going on. But before I let you get out of here, Joe Coy, I have a rapid fire segment sponsored by Tri-State Cadillac Dealers. Ready to do this?
Sure.
Gone in 60 seconds. What is your go-to spot to grab Filipino food in the U.S.?
My mom's house.
Which city has the toughest audience to do stand-up?
Oh, man. What city? Ooh, I don't have one. Idaho.
Good answer. Someplace you ain't got no show scheduled anytime soon. That's a great answer. So, with Whoopi Goldberg, and I heard you mention her, tell me your favorite thing about her favorite stand-up.
From her stand-up special?
Yes.
Fontaine. Fontaine was my favorite. Seeing him do, you know, Fontaine. I also loved Little Blonde Girl when she put the shirt on her head and became a little blonde girl. I thought that was just genius how she became characters. And that's why when I do my mom, I become my mom. I don't do a horrible impersonation. I do it. And that I got that from Whoopi.
Love it. Lastly, and certainly not least, and I'm going to not only write a column about this in the New York Post, but we're going to send you a framed version of it because I appreciate you taking the time. What part of your new film, Easter Sunday, are you most excited for the audience to see?
When Lou Diamond Phillips enters the scene. Mm. That was like one of those moments where I was just like, one, I'm acting with, you know, someone that inspired me. You know what I mean? And two, it was just a great scene to improvise and ad-lib with one of the greatest.
Well, you earned your spot. I appreciate you taking time. More success to come, Joe Coy. Thank you very much for joining the Renaissance Man.
I love you, man.
Hey, love you too, my brother.
Can I say one more thing?
Absolutely.
Madison Square Garden. I'm playing it in November.
I'll be there. I'll be there.
Jalen, don't say that, Jalen.
I'll be there. Done.
I swear to God, Jalen.
Done.
I want you there.
It'd be my pleasure, my brother. Thanks a lot for the invite. I'm going to come and represent.
I love you, man.
Love you too, brother.
Last call.
Yeah, I'm talking to you. I'd like to thank Joe for stopping by the podcast. And congratulations to him for his new movie, Easter Sunday, which is out right now. Make sure you go support that. One thing that stuck out to me about my conversation with Joe that's really fascinating is when he talked about bombing on stage during his career. Going on stage after George Wilburn's set sounds brutal. Even the Asian American magazine who came there to cover Joe thought he did so bad that they didn't even do the interview. But in his words, bombing like that was necessary. It was humbling. And it taught him not to just depend on his material, but also be ready for the unexpected. Joe became a better performer because of that experience. And he definitely did not allow that to stop him from getting back in front of audiences and doing what he loves. What moment in your life taught you to be more humble? Remembering how you felt during a moment of failure, it hurts, it's painful, it's uncomfortable, but try to see the ways it showed you to be better. Let it fuel you on your path to your greatness. I'm the Renaissance Man. See you next week.